LaMelo Ball's been traded from Charlotte to Minnesota. Tom Havisher and I hopped on to discuss this crazy, crazy trade. There's so many interesting angles to this LaMelo deal going to Minnesota that we get into. We also talk about everything else happening right now around the NBA. Jaylen Brown, what's going on there? Kawhi Leonard, could he be on the move? And what happened in the NBA draft and a lot else? That's all coming up right now with me and Tom Havisher. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connell Show. A little bit of an emergency podcast here, because I'll tell you what, man, we got a LaMelo Ball trade joining me to discuss. Tom Havisher, how are you, Tom?
I'm good. I'm checking in with all my friends here in Charlotte, seeing how they're feeling right now with LaMelo gone. It is a new day in Charlotte Hornets history when we're considering how amazing the season was last year, and the city just completely lit up around LaMelo Ball, Con Knipple, and Brandon Miller. But now LaMelo Ball is shipped up to Minnesota, and that is a shocking deal considering how much good vibes there were in the city.
I know. I mean, it was an unbelievable year for Charlotte. LaMelo played the best basketball of his life in the second half of that year, and now it's over after the trade has been made, sending LaMelo Ball and Josh Green to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Naz Reid, an unprotected first in 2033, three first-round pick swaps, which are a little bit complicated, we'll get into later, in 28, 29, and 30, three second-round picks in 29, 30, and 33. Let's start out with the Minnesota side of this thing here, because, Tom, this is the trade for a contending team trying to take the next step after stagnating, falling short in the postseason, and their big bet is LaMelo Ball. And it's obviously a calculated risk here for Minnesota to get somebody who's had as many injuries as LaMelo, somebody who isn't much of a leader, who makes a lot of crazy decisions. It wasn't a great ending to his tenure in Charlotte either, the way things went in the play-in tournament. However, he does raise their ceiling, undeniably. The flair he plays with, the pace with which he plays with on the floor, he's an offense unto himself. And the what he brings to this Minnesota team is exactly what they've been missing. That said, though, Tom, this is a risk, and it's a sell high for Charlotte. And for Minnesota, they're giving up a lot here for a guy who's no guarantee to actually make things work. And who knows, a year from now, we could be talking about them blowing things up.
Yeah, Kev, this is sell high. The way to look at this from the Charlotte Hornets perspective is that they sold high at a peak value for LaMelo Ball. I'm going to read to you right now the games played by LaMelo Ball since he became an NBA player at 19 years old. 51 games, 75, 36, 22, 47, and then last season, 72. And when you look at the way that teams operate in these scenarios, usually they're very conservative. When they get some success like this, like what you saw from this Charlotte Hornets team last season, the best offensive rating, best net rating, five-man lineup with Musa Diabate and Miles Bridges along with those other three, and the three-point shooting style led by Charles Lee, and the offensive rebounding that you saw, that they did not make it into the playoffs. But what you saw was magic on the floor. The whole entire city, the region, was so excited to see LaMelo Ball finally healthy. And here is the front office saying, this is the time to sell. Like, we've seen so many teams hold on to young players who are injury prone or have injury risks and just say, as soon as they get a little taste of success that all the things start to click, they hold on. And then they aren't able to get full value for that star player when things go sideways again. So they're making a bet here that LaMelo Ball, with all the medical intel they have, the locker room intel of his impact in a locker room and his leadership, they've seen it over the last six seasons. They have more information on LaMelo Ball than any team in the NBA. And that includes Minnesota. They're going to do their due diligence on medicals and talk around the league. But no team knows the LaMelo Ball experience better than the Charlotte Hornets. And I think it's very telling that as soon as they got a little bit of success and he had 72 out of 82 games played, they said, it is time to get out of the LaMelo Ball business. And I think with the swaps going forward, the first round pick, it is a risk from the Charlotte Hornets side too, because we don't know what the draft is going to look like for many of those picks in the deal. 2030 is at 2030 and 2031 and the anything beyond that, we don't know what the first round is going to look like. We don't know what the lottery is going to look like. And so both sides are taking a huge risk. And from the Minnesota standpoint, obviously the innovation, the playmaking, the speed, the shooting next to Anthony Edwards is going to make for an absolutely electric backcourt. But losing Julius Randle and losing Naz Reid in these two deals with the Brooklyn Nets that's going to be expanded, this is going to be a whole new look for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and certainly something that the fans will be really excited about to see. But with the injury history of LaMelo Ball, the Charlotte Hornets decided to sell, and that is telling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the point you're hitting there, Tom, with Charlotte deciding to sell here would give me a little fear if I'm Minnesota. But at the same time, like, you could be buying an asset that's still on the rise in value. Like, LaMelo could now have the best season of his career, and still, after the doubts after what he did this last year in Charlotte, he might prove people wrong again and have an even better season of his career. So that's always possible. He's still in his mid-20s, and I'm not just saying that because I have a Big Baller Brand shirt on that I bought when he, like, when he was a young player earlier in his career. But I think for Minnesota, one thing I'm curious about here, obviously Anthony Edwards, he has been open about this, very tired of facing two, seeing double teams all the time, sometimes as soon as he crosses the half court, it happening very early. This mitigates that for Minnesota's half court offense. LaMelo, the creation he brings, re-signing Ayo Dosunmu as well, they have more outlets, more places they can put the ball in the hands of certain players and have them initiate offense and attack from different points. I think we're seeing Minnesota shift towards that a bit more often. It's going to be a team that they were relying on old man Mike Conley, and you can't rely on a 38, soon to be 39-year-old player and Conley. So I think they help out there. However, Tom, they traded Julius Randle. That already happened. They just traded Naz Reid, a very, very good player who I thought was possibly going to be in for a big season in Minnesota before this deal happened. I thought for the first time he was going to get starter opportunities and a really good team. That's not happening. And now you look at Minnesota's front court. It's Rudy Gobert. They Yoan Berengig, and they get some youth on the bench, but they don't have the size that they once had and were very reliant on in their serious wins against Denver, the size that they needed against Jokic. And what was valuable for them in some regards against the Spurs, they seem to be going the other way now with a smaller team. And I wonder if with that, they have the taxpayer mid-level exception, $6 million. It's a very shallow free agent class. We're talking like Porzingis. I mean, there's just not a lot out there. You know, Larry Nance Jr. for that $6 million. I don't get the impression that Minnesota is quite done yet, Tom, but they've depleted their assets at this point. And so I think any moves from here on forward would be more around the edges to add a little bit more depth in that front court, which I am a little concerned about when you look at how small this team is.
Oh, yeah. And Rudy Gobert is not a spring chicken. Like, we're talking about a guy who's on the wrong side of 30 here. So if something happens to Rudy Gobert, who's been super healthy, as healthy as it comes, when you look around the league and bigs, he takes care of his body. He's always in great shape. So I just say that they're very thin in that front court. But the bet is, if you're going to have LaMelo Ball on your team, you're going to want Rudy Gobert. It is a perfect fit in terms of the offensive and defensive deficiencies of both of those players. They complement each other so well. And LaMelo Ball is going to get Rudy Gobert on lobs way more than any player that he has played with, Rudy Gobert. He's an incredibly innovative passer, a guy who's always looking for Miles Bridges or Brandon Miller on the weak side. And he's always a live lob threat wherever he is on the floor. As soon as he enters the half court, even beyond, I think defenses are always going to have their mind on where's Gobert on that lob.
Well, are we sure he's going to be there, Tom? Are we positive? Are we
sure they're going to be on the Timberwolves, you're saying?
Yeah. Are we sure about that? Because, like, I don't get the impression that Minnesota's totally done here in my conversations. I've heard even prior to this trade happening that Minnesota explored deals with Boston for Jaylen Brown, according to my sources. And so I don't think that there's any other deal to be done with Boston. They depleted their assets. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen. I'd be shocked if anything were to happen there. However, there were the rumblings about Boston having interest in Rudy Gobert. I'd imagine there are other teams with interest in Rudy Gobert. He doesn't have much time left on his contract. It's not like you have a very long-term commitment to him. And so I think for Minnesota, I know for a fact, they really are really, 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 really high on Johan Berenguer. They really think Johan Berenguer could play an important role next season, whether it's as a backup to Gobert or possibly as a guy getting more starter level minutes. And so maybe the Gobert move is next, where they just totally blow it up around Anthony Edwards, just totally shuffle this entire front court, change the roster with Ant being the centerpiece of it. And Jaden McDaniels, it does seem like they want to keep him as well, where you just have all these attackers. But then you have Johan Berenguer as your center, and then you flip Gobert into some type of like more traditional power forward type of guy, a big forward. I wonder if that could be something we see happen, Tom, because I just don't get the impression that the Wolves are done. I think there could be more moves to be made for Minnesota. So I don't want to like totally judge the team for what it looks like today, where it is a smaller team, where yes, there are some roster construction questions about this team. I think offensively, there's no doubt this offense is going to be awesome, but they got to figure out the balance there. And I just don't think they're done. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think Minnesota's done yet.
Kev, I'm feeling a lot of Giannis in Milwaukee vibes right now. It's just the front office, if they're making a complete, just with Ant, yeah, is the desperation of, we got to two conference finals and another run last season, and then we're blowing it up completely. You got to make sure that Anthony Edwards is happy with all this. That it has to be coming from Anthony Edwards, that I don't want Nas, I don't want Julius Randle, I don't want Rudy Gobert, and I don't want any of this to come back next season, because I feel like we need a complete change of the future. And unless Rudy Gobert is moved to a piece that really changes things for them, and I don't know what that deal is, like you said, teams in the Eastern Conference, whether it's Toronto, Cleveland, that are trying to amp up and get better defense, where is the Rudy Gobert spot going to be if you are looking to completely blow things up? It is shocking to me. Kev, you said it earlier. I was so looking forward to Naz Reid being the starting point power forward next to Rudy Gobert alongside Ant and Ayo Dosunmu next season. And now that's not even a reality. The fact that they've already moved off of Julius Randle and Naz Reid and decided to bring in a very volatile player in LaMelo Ball, the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows in terms of off-court and on-court issues that he brings, that you've got to be extremely careful when, even before this trade, even before the Julius Randle trade, people around the league were looking at, hey, Anthony Edwards could be the next disgruntled superstar, megastar in the NBA. Now that Giannis Antetokounmpo is traded to Miami, I think the rest of the league was looking at Anthony Edwards in Minnesota. And now, with LaMelo Ball there and no Julius Randle or Naz Reid, with a potential for more moves with Rudy Gobert, I think all the eyes around the NBA are looking at Anthony Edwards and how he feels about these deals a year later. Because we saw with the Giannis Antetokounmpo situation, they move off of Drew Holiday, and in the reports from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where you see all the moves made to appease Giannis, and ultimately none of them worked, and he wanted out anyway. The Damian Lillard deal, the Miles Turner signing. These all seem like a prototype of what we might be seeing with the Minnesota Timberwolves, that they are scrambling right now to make Anthony Edwards happy and try to swing for the fences. But what if they miss?
And it might be a miss. And I think that's what the Wolves are doing here. Minnesota, undeniably here, Tim Connelly has never been afraid to take big swings. And that's what this is. It is a big swing. They're going for a home run here. And it's possible it just falls short at the warning track. It's possible he swings and misses and it's a strikeout. And 1 year from now, we're talking about Anthony Edwards, where he's going to go, him and LaMelo. It didn't work out. LaMelo played 25 games, or the chemistry wasn't there as they had anticipated it being. We don't know. We can't predict the future here. And neither can Tim Connelly, who runs the Wolves front office. But ultimately, I think that's what I appreciate with this deal. I appreciate the courage going for LaMelo Ball here, because I think this raises Minnesota's ceiling. Without a doubt, LaMelo Ball raises the ceiling of the Minnesota Timberwolves, but he also dramatically lowers the floor, considering everything that can go wrong with him off court, on court, with injuries, the risks he takes on court as well, the way things collapsed in Charlotte. There's a chance that this just, they're a first round exit, that they're a seven seed, they're in the play-in. There's a chance of that. However, with the way it raises the ceiling, alleviates pressure off of Anthony Edwards with that Minnesota offense facing so many double teams, this does raise their ceiling to a point that I think they could be pretty special. They just need to round out the rest of their roster here and figure things out. And I think that that whole aspect that we're hitting on with the upside of Minnesota is why you see Charlotte Hornets fans in a panic. Since last night, at the end of the NBA draft on Wednesday, like last minute of the ESPN broadcast, Shams Charania pops on the TV and says, we're hearing that the Hornets are having trade talks with LaMelo Ball. It's like, wow, what a tease. It's like the end of an episode of TV on Netflix, right? It's like they just make you click. They make you watch the next one. You're there. You're just continuing to watch. You're binging. And I'm just ready. I didn't want to go to sleep. You wake up and, you know, shortly after, LaMelo's gone. He's gone. And as a Hornets fan that just had the funnest, most exciting season of their recent history, maybe ever, and now that's gone, the engine of that, the heart of that, and LaMelo Ball, he was part of one of the most efficient lineups in NBA history with him, Con Knipple, Brandon Miller. And now that's gone. And so I think for Charlotte here, as you said earlier, Tom, this is undoubtedly a sell high, because 1 year ago, they would not have gotten even a fraction of this in return for LaMelo Ball. I'm not even sure they would have gotten just Naz Reid. Naz Reid, right, as good as he is, in return for LaMelo Ball 1 year ago. And now they get Naz Reid, three pick swaps, one unprotected first in 2033, three second round picks for LaMelo and Josh Green. It's a haul, in my opinion, given where LaMelo was a year ago and where he could be a year from today. But it is a risk for Charlotte as well. I said on draft night, Tom, when the Christian Anderson pick happened at 18, I was like, I wonder if this is a hedge against LaMelo. Could this be them kind of adding another guard in the backcourt, like with Kobe White, in case LaMelo gets hurt or in case they decide to trade LaMelo? That was what we talked about at the time when they got Kobe White in February. And I felt it again when they got Christian Anderson. And I really do think those decisions did lead to this, where they said, yeah, we can get out of a LaMelo business now, and we have other guys who can create off the dribble for this offense. Is it going to be one of the greatest offenses in NBA history? Probably not, but I like this way this roster looks a heck of a lot more today than I did at the beginning of the offseason prior to the draft.
Well, Kev, I think another shoe is going to drop here for the Charlotte Hornets because of that $40.7 million trade exception that Bobby Marks has pointed out in this deal. I think you're going to be looking at any veteran point guard or any point guard out there on the market where a team is trying to shed salary, and the Charlotte Hornets don't, I don't think this is their starting five next year. I think they're going to upgrade at that point guard position from in-house. I don't think Kobe White's going to be starting at the one, or Brandon Miller and Con Knipple are going to be sharing duties with a free agent scrap heap signing. This is not a placeholder. They're going to just get a guy like Tyus Jones to start for their next season. I think they're going to go and try to find a really strong starter there at the point guard position. And given that they have a $40 million trade exception, I think you got to look at guys, Drew Holiday, Kyrie Irving, names like Darius Garland, names that they could bring in under that trade exception or make some moves on the edges there to get in a starter with all-star upside at the point guard position. Because I think that's one of the things you have to look at in this deal is, it's not just that they got Naz Reid and those firsts. It's what this does for their trade exception and being able to get a frontline starter at the point guard position. This is not, the Hornets are not done, is what I'm trying to tell you. Is with that exception, I think that opens up a lot of deals.
I think you could be right about kind of that veteran type, Drew Holiday, you know, DeJounte Murray, somebody along those lines. I could see something like that. ultimately for Charlotte, I do wonder how much like trust you can put in the youth and Christian Anderson as a rookie. And obviously Coby White being a point, he's more of a combo type of guy. So I would imagine that they'd like to have a veteran in the room in the backcourt using that traded player exception. But I could also see Charlotte deciding just to sit on it and wait to see if there's something in January or February with all their draft capital, with 12 future first round draft picks and flexibility with tradable contracts as well. I could also see Charlotte deciding just to wait, but I do think that they should bring in a veteran as part of this rotation. I like the Drew Holiday idea, especially with what he brings on the defensive end of the floor. I really like that one, but I do really like Christian Anderson. I'm not saying like a rookie guy who is the 18th pick in the draft who couldn't do a lot else besides shoot is going to be a LaMelo Ball replacement. I'm not saying that for Hornets fans who think I'm setting unrealistic expectations, but I do think considering the way this roster is constructed with Brandon Miller and Con Knipple and Coby White, Christian Anderson, Naz Reid can create off the dribble too as a forward. Like Naz Reid, sometimes Minnesota would put the ball in his hands and let him run some big, big pick and roll. He would bring it up the floor himself. Charlotte's got a lot of guys who can handle the ball is my point. And so it's not like with the guard they bring in, to your point here, Tom, it doesn't have to be a traditional guard who has the ball in his hands all the time. It can be a Drew Holiday type that can play off ball and be a cutter and be a screener and be in the dunker spot, sometimes playing like he's a big man, like he did in Boston in their title run. So I think with this Charlotte team, what they're building out now, they might take a slight step back without LaMelo. But I also think this team, depending on how Brandon Miller develops, depending on the leap Con Knipple takes in year two, and depending on what else they do, there's a chance that Charlotte making this deal is an absolute stroke of genius. There's a chance of that where we look back and we're like, wow, they got all that for LaMelo. Or it's going to be mutually beneficial. And for Charlotte, it's like life is still good post-LaMelo.
So the swaps, let's talk about them. I think swaps now are like super firsts. Like people are saying, oh, the Hornets only got one first round pick and it's way in the distance at 2033. But with the new draft lottery reform, the ability to get a swap for a team like the Minnesota Timberwolves, if they make the playoffs or if they make the play-in and they are able to still be in the draft lottery in 28 or 29, the upside of the flattened lottery odds is immense. For the Charlotte Hornets, it's not, you cannot say this is just one first round pick with the new draft lottery rules.
I want to interject, Tom, just real quick with the pick swaps here. Like these ones are not straight swaps. Like only one of them is. 2028 is the straight swap with Minnesota having the full right. So 2029, Minnesota had traded it to the Spurs but protected it top five. So like Charlotte can get it if it lands in the top five, but Utah would get the first rights in 2029. And then 2030, the Spurs get the first rights. So it's not like Charlotte doesn't get the first dibs on the 2030, but they're still very valuable. I do think like the overall overarching point, swaps are the new thing, in other words, for teams to be able to have that swap rights with the new lottery rules.
Yeah, in 2030, the draft lottery rules are already sunset, so we don't even know what 2030 is going to look like.
Could be draft credit system, right?
It could be, or could be something else. I think when people look at the draft lottery rules and looking forward, people need to realize in the chat, if you're listening, I think people need to realize that the new draft lottery rules with flattened odds through 1 through 16 is only in effect for the next three drafts, 27, 28, and 29. So when you're seeing a 2030 swap or a 2033 first round pick, remember the system could be totally revamped by them and we could be swinging to a more conservative approach like we had previous iteration of the draft lottery rules, or we could see something completely different, which makes it a risk to trade for any first round pick beyond that, you know, when the new system kicks in 2030, or it could be a huge benefit. And because no team really knows what it's going to look like 2030 and beyond. So originally when I looked at this, I thought, hey, this deal is a short on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Incredibly, in financial terms, you're basically betting on the downside of the team that you're trading with. So you could see that them getting the 2033 unprotected. Finance,
Tom Haverstraw back again.
Here we go, baby. So when you look at this, you could be shorting the Minnesota Timberwolves, essentially like, hey, we're going to swap all your picks going forward because we think that you're going to be tanking with LaMelo Ball. Like your team is not going to be going well. And the organization, like you're making a bet that it's going to be worst case scenario for the Minnesota Timberwolves, that you're saying LaMelo Ball is not going to work next to Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is going to ask out and all hell breaks loose for Minnesota. Originally, that's what I was looking at this deal as. Charlotte, basically, with their finance front office oriented at the ownership, that they're making a short on the Minnesota Timberwolves. But considering the little tweaks that you're mentioning here, and smart to point out, is that it's not a full-blown swap in 29 and 30. It is in 28 when you look at the draft swaps that they did get. So I don't think it's accurate to say they only got one first-round pick. Yes. And this is a terrible deal for the Charlotte Hornets. They are getting some upside here and ability to get better picks than they thought they were going to get before they made this deal. So it is a long way out. A 2033 first-round pick, that is a long way out, but it could be a totally no Anthony Edwards in that situation too, in the same way that the Miami Heat were willing to put picks into the future, or the Milwaukee Bucks wanted to get picks down the road for Giannis Antetokounmpo, because we really don't know what the draft lottery rules are going to be in 2030 and beyond. As we saw with the Memphis pick, the NBA is not going to necessarily take care of the teams that made long distance into the future draft deals. They're just going to say, tough luck. I know you guys traded for a 2033 under the previous rules, but you should have known that the draft lottery could look very different down the road. So this is a risk in both directions for the Charlotte Hornets. They don't know what the draft is going to look like for that 2030 or that 2033 first round pick. And the 2030 is a swap. So it is going to be a much different system, which kind of scrambles things for front offices making deals. It's very hard to project what these first round picks are going to look like.
What should Charlotte Hornets fans know about Naz Reid is one of the questions on my mind right now, Tom, because I feel like Naz Reid is just one of those kind of cult hero players that Wolves fans know how great Naz Reid is with his shooting off of movement, the attacking off the dribble, the passing within the flow of the offense, the energy, the fact you always call him by his first name and his last name. Eric Collins, the Hornets announcer, is going to fall in love with Naz Reid and just how fun he is as a player. And I think for Hornets fans, obviously you're sad to lose the Melo. But Naz Reid is just such a good player, and I can't wait to see him, I'm assuming, start for a really, really good Eastern Conference team. We're finally going to get to see what Naz Reid looks like empowered as a starter. And I was really bullish on what he was going to be able to do in Minnesota prior to the deal, Tom. And now in this high-powered Charlotte Hornets offense, could be a potential career year for Naz Reid. This in some ways like to sell high on LaMelo, but in some ways maybe a buy low on Naz Reid, if that makes any sense, considering we've never seen him as a starter.
Dude, Naz Reid is awesome. Like I'm not saying that he's going to be an all-star next year, but he is going to have a lot more room to grow in Charlotte, a lot more oxygen to breathe in Charlotte, considering that they already had Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert there in Minnesota. Finally gets the opportunity he's been looking for his entire career, and now he's going to get it. I can't believe that we're sitting here saying that the Minnesota Timberwolves traded Julius Randle, the free up spot for Naz Reid. Finally, we get to see it. And now they're saying in both directions, the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves almost said, sorry, fans, you're not going to get to see finally what you wanted to see next year with the Charlotte Hornets saying a full season of these guys playing with Musa Diabate, Miles Bridges, and them all playing all 82 games, whereas Musa kind of came in later in the season. Naz Reid is so good. He's not just a stretch five. Like, I think people need to realize Naz Reid can do a lot more things than just shoot. You know, he reminds me a lot of Rasheed Wallace, where, yes, he is a knockdown 40% three-point shooter as a big, but he can do so many things offensively for you. He's a great passer, underrated rebounder, and so he's not just a guy who's just going to stand out there and hit threes. I think he's a lot more dynamic than that. He averaged three assists every 36 minutes, which is much better than you would suspect for a a power forward slash center out there. And I think you're going to love, Charlotte fans are going to love Naz Reid, but it is going to be still very tough. Everywhere you look around this city, there's going to be a LaMelo Ball jersey wherever, on every corner that you see in this town. So it's going to be hard emotionally to come back after LaMelo Ball being shipped out to Minnesota. But you and I both know, as Red Sox fans, when they traded Nomar Garciaparra, everybody in Boston and New England was devastated to see him go. But ultimately, at the end, there's championships and World Series on the back end of that because of the assets that the Red Sox got in that deal. So as much as it is painful for Charlotte to see LaMelo Ball go, in many ways, Naz Reid is not just a good option here that they're getting back in the deal. I think Naz Reid has the potential to be an all-star in the Eastern Conference now that he is in the Charlotte Hornets organization.
Is Naz Reid the Orlando Cabrera or the Doug Mintkiewicz?
Doug Mintkiewicz? I think he's better than both of them, but I would say a lot of people in the audience are like, who is Orlando Cabrera? And Dougie Mint, as I used to call him. But it is hard. It is hard to like move off of LaMelo Ball. But I know for a lot of fans in Charlotte, it was very frustrating to not know if LaMelo was going to be healthy or not. And I think the Hornets were smart to sell high and get a boatload of these draft assets along with Naz Reid, because he's still 26 years old, turning 27 next year. And I think Naz Reid is going to be a really special player for them, and he has all-star upside.
Yep, I'm with you there, Tom. One last note on the Minnesota side of this deal. There was some talk back and forth in the chat earlier regarding Anthony Edwards having the ball in his hands and LaMelo taking it out of his hands. I think one thing that's worth citing here is, A, we've seen Ant play off ball before. B, Tim Connelly, the Wolves general manager, said this at his exit interview. Anthony is a top five player, clearly. He's the best two-way guard in the league. Where are the areas that he needs help with? How can we create more easy looks for him? He's an elite catch-and-shoot guy. We need to do a better job of finding those looks for him. Enter LaMelo Ball. He hinted exactly at what they were going to be trying to do. They got LaMelo Ball. This is what Anthony Edwards wants. I think the idea that he needs the ball in his hands is insane. I think Anthony Edwards has turned himself into a elite, truly elite level shooter off of movement. He's somebody that you're going to see more off of screening actions. I think Anthony Edwards, we could potentially see the best version ever of him playing next to LaMelo Ball. It's just a matter of what does Minnesota do to round out the rest of this roster, and we really don't have a full clear picture there because the offseason, Tom, is still in swing. Like, we haven't even really gotten started, baby. I mean, we got the Giannis deal, we got the LaMelo deal, and Jaylen Brown is still in Boston, and we don't know where Jaylen Brown is going to go. It's kind of funny, like, for all the talk about Giannis, it was so open, Boston or Miami. We knew the mystery teams. We knew all the names. As soon as LaMelo was announced last night by Shams as being involved in trade conversations, we knew the names. We knew Minnesota. We knew Toronto. Even this morning, it was reported that Milwaukee, very interestingly, inquired about LaMelo. With Jaylen Brown, there's not a lot of clarity with who the Jaylen Brown teams are. There's been no definitive reporting around Houston or Atlanta or New Orleans or any of these teams that you would assume have interest in Jaylen Brown. And I just find that very, very interesting. Do you think it's because perhaps there's nothing that's getting a lot of traction? Or is this more that Boston tends to keep things very, very quiet? Or could it be that Boston is trying to work to influence Jaylen Brown to want to stay? What's your gut say about what's going on behind the scenes right now with Jaylen Brown?
I think it's his contract. Honestly, it's not that you're getting Jaylen Brown. It's that you're owing him $57 million next season and then $61 million in the following season and $65 million in 28-29 season. For the next 3 years, you're paying him like like an MVP candidate. And yes, in all things came together last season and he was in that range of a fringe MVP candidate. But if you're acquiring him at this point in his career, you got to believe that you're getting a guy that's going to be MVP at the top of that list for a while. When you're talking about the contract and the fact that, you know, the on-court, off-court splits last year for Boston, Celtics fans hated when we were talking about it all last year, but it's a big reason why I didn't have him first team All-NBA on my list or second team All-NBA. It's because I thought a lot of the things that Jaylen Brown was getting credit for and carrying, quote-unquote, carrying the Boston Celtics, a lot of the metrics and just playing win-loss record when he was off the floor, the Celtics were a really great team still when Jaylen Brown wasn't playing. And so I think some teams are looking at those on-off splits and looking at the contract that he's coming, that's coming down the pipe for Jaylen Brown, and wondering, is it really worth it to put in the assets that Boston is going to be acquiring or asking for? So I think the gut tax that you have when you're getting Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think it's much easier to trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo because he's a two-time MVP, defensive player of the year candidate when he's healthy. I don't think you have the same upside with Jaylen Brown. I think the upside is much lower for Jaylen Brown, but he's going to be paid more than just about every player in the NBA over the next three seasons. So I think a lot of teams are probably looking at the asking price of Brad Stevens and the Boston Celtics and saying, I'm going to pass. I think that's why you are not hearing talks getting further down the road here, is that I think it's just, I think the asking price for a Jaylen Brown is probably quite high. And then for a team, is that contract going to be prohibitive, or is it something that teams are going to want on their books?
I mean, the little things that have really leaked out about, you know, why teams might be not as in on him, that is part of it. I had heard with Atlanta, this was during the earlier stages of the Giannis trade talks, I had heard that Atlanta isn't like as in on Jaylen Brown as people think that they would be because of the Georgia connection and all that, and the need for a guy like Jaylen Brown. But the reason was because with 3 years left on his contract at a very high price point, and the idea of what that next salary is going to look like after 3 years, which would take him into his mid-late 30s at a still significant price point, there's teams concerned about that next contract, Atlanta included. That's not to say that Atlanta wouldn't trade for him, but I think there's a line, there's a price where there'd be a comfortability in saying, okay, this is worth it for us. I mean, we haven't gotten any clarity over Houston. Our coworker Kelly Eco reported on Yahoo Sports that he doesn't believe that the Rockets are actually in on Jaylen Brown, despite the Ime Udoka connection from their time in Boston together and their relationship. So if that is the case, unless Houston has secret interest that they continue denying, well, that rules out Houston potentially. Could it be a team like New Orleans where they just want to become more competent? I could see that. I could see New Orleans being a team that have interest in Jaylen Brown. I know for a fact, according to my sources, that Boston has had conversations with the Pelicans for Trey Murphy. And so I could see a world in which you see Jaylen Brown land with the Pelicans. Maybe, how about, teams we're not talking about, Tom? Brian Windhorst connected the Pistons to Kawhi Leonard. What if the Pistons tried to dump all their picks to Boston for Jaylen Brown? It was a more picks heavy type of deal for Boston. Maybe Detroit, you know, of these playoff teams that might want to take a leap. That's of the top 12 teams last year that, you know, got guaranteed playoff seeds. I think Detroit would comes to mind, but it's like really. It's really hard to find a playoff team that would want a guy making that level of money and has assets to give up that would appease Boston.
In a few years ago, when Kyrie Irving was with Cleveland and they traded him for Isaiah Thomas, people were shocked that the Boston Celtics would trade Isaiah Thomas in a deal right to a contender, one of their rivals in the Eastern Conference. And so now do the Boston Celtics make a similar deal with either, if it's Cleveland or Detroit, two teams that are very desperate to get over the hump and they get a finals MVP out of it? That's, you know, for Detroit, they are certainly looking for a co-pilot for Cade Cunningham now that the Jaden Ivey thing did not work out. And you're also seeing, you know, LaMelo Ball go to Minnesota. I think if you're Detroit, you might have to put in a couple more assets if you're going to go try to get a star-level guard next to Cade Cunningham because of the fact that LaMelo Ball is now off the board for them. So potentially, I think some people might say, hey, Boston can't trade Jaylen Brown to a team that they're going to be contending against, but they've shown that they did that. They don't care about that stuff. So that's interesting. Is what? Who are the suitors for Jaylen Brown? And could it be to a team like Detroit?
Well, I mean, Chris Mannix on NBC Sports Boston earlier in the week said that he heard the Celtics had interest in Evan Mobley, which I think would be a horrific move for Boston to trade for Evan Mobley. Mobley is definitely a talented young player. Do not get me wrong. He had some good moments in the playoffs. He also had some absolute stinkers with his one rebound game and the fact that this Cavaliers defense with a defensive player of the year in Mobley just had no identity. And that's in part due to the fact that Mobley is not a tone setter. And so I think with Evan Mobley, if he's Boston's target, if you turn Jaylen Brown into Evan Mobley with all his flaws offensively as a shooter, as a creator, the stagnation that we've seen with his development and the defensive aspect, he's talented without a doubt, but he's not an enforcer. He lacks a level of toughness. He lacks strength. I would not trade Jaylen Brown for Evan Mobley if I'm the Boston Celtics. I would much rather some type of package of Jared Allen plus Donovan Mitchell for Jaylen Brown plus whatever. I'd rather do that type of swap than trade for Evan Mobley. I would hate that for Boston, which I think speaks to what we're hitting on here, Tom, with the salary aspect that turns some teams off, the numbers. The fact Boston statistically has been better without Jaylen Brown on the floor, regardless of his individual success or regardless of the context, that's how some teams might perceive it, that maybe he's not as great as it appears on the surface with his level of production. With those aspects, plus what Boston needs back in return, that's really the biggest one here in terms of finding a match. And I do wonder if maybe there could be some team that nobody's talking about that comes out of nowhere and we see a Shams or Sharania notification that says he's been traded to blank and nobody saw it coming. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility here, which is why I mentioned Detroit, because Detroit is definitely up to something. And we don't know exactly what. On draft night, second night of the draft, they traded Isaiah Stewart to the Memphis Grizzlies for 3 second-round draft picks. That opened up cap flexibility for them. They can now get to over $30 million in cap space, depending on what they do with Jalen Duren and others with the cap holds on those players. So they have a lot of flexibility this offseason to play around with free agents or taking salaries in through trade. And for Detroit, they were aggressive trading up for Ibuka Okori in the first round, which I love. Downhill attacker. I think he's a great pairing with Cade Cunningham. But you're not relying on a rookie to be the only guy to support Cade Cunningham. Kawhi Leonard is the one people mentioned, Tom. Windhorst this morning on Get Up said he's a target for the Pistons, but Windhorst said, quote, "I'm not even sure the NBA will allow Kawhi to be extended or traded until there's a resolution to this investigation." So if that's the case, we might not even have a Kawhi Leonard trade here unless we get a resolution there soon. But I do think Kawhi would make sense for a Pistons target, don't you think?
Oh yeah, I love Kawhi Leonard's game, but they gotta get resolution on this aspiration deal. I mean, the fact that it's taken almost a year now. I don't know what else you need to see from Pablo Torre's reporting and their internal investigations for Adam Silver to give a ruling. He says he was a month ago or a few weeks ago. He said at his press conference that they needed to wrap this up soon, and I think. For the Clippers, when they get the number 5 pick and get Wagler, I think when you look at the talent that they are building, infusing, it seems like they're making a change of trying to figure out whether we're going to be a win now team anymore, or whether we're going to be a hey, let's retool and try to figure out how we can get some assets to build a future under Steve Ballmer with the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard with James Harden. With Paul George, with Ivica Zubats, had a much more win now feel to it. But now with the Clippers, I am very, very skeptical that they are going to keep trying to run it back and try to win a championship with this core. Seems like with Darius Garland and the change that they made with James Harden, they were making a decision that they are going to build for the future rather than now. So Kawhi Leonard, the fact that he's still a Clipper, it does suggest that maybe they're being held hostage a little bit by this aspiration investigation and that they might want to make moves, but they can't really do it until they get an announcement from Adam Silver. It's time. I would not be surprised if we do get an announcement from Adam Silver before free agency starts, because if you're the Los Angeles Clippers and you're trying to make deals through the free agency process in the transaction cycle, I can't imagine that maybe that's part of the punishment is that you have to have Kawhi Leonard on your books and it's basically going to be a logjam for your franchise. Yeah. But I can't imagine that the Clippers are very happy that they're continuing to be underneath this investigation. And for Kawhi Leonard, I mean, you have Miami, you have Detroit, you have Golden State, you have a lot of teams that are trying to win a championship that would want to have Kawhi Leonard's services. And it's just a question of whether he's going to be available because of this aspiration thing that is still hanging over the franchise.
One of the very interesting things that happened on the second round broadcast, they were talking about Kawhi Leonard deals, and there was like this kind of weird silence when I believe it was Malika Andrews said who would be interested, and like nobody really said anything because they didn't want to get aggregated. and then Bobby Marks chimes in, maybe his former teams. His former teams would be San Antonio and Toronto. I can't fathom San Antonio trading for Kawhi Leonard, just given the salaries they'd have to give up. Devin Vassell was so important to them. I'd just be surprised, maybe, but I would be surprised. Toronto, on the other hand, though, I could definitely see Toronto trading for Kawhi Leonard. Brandon Ingram plus whatever it takes to go get Kawhi Leonard again with 1 year left on his deal, try to do it again, repeat history. I could see that. I could definitely see Toronto trying to go trade for Kawhi. But what did you make of that comment by Bobby Marks, Tom? And do you think San Antonio or Toronto should be in on Kawhi?
Yeah, I just don't see the front office with San Antonio, RC Buford, going back into the Kawhi Leonard business after how ugly that was in San Antonio. So I think you can cross off the San Antonio Spurs from that
maybe
list.
Maybe they're like J-Lo and Ben Affleck. They get together again years later and then they break it off again. Maybe that's what it is, this type of relationship. They just have some real chemistry, Tom. They just can't resist each other.
Look, man, after we saw Dan Gilbert and LeBron James reunite in Cleveland,
yes,
maybe all the bets are off when it comes to those relationships you never, ever would expect after the Dan Gilbert letter. And LeBron James just said, all right, I still want to go back to Cleveland. Granted, I think when Bobby Marks is saying former teams, he's really talking about the Toronto Raptors. And you can understand why the Raptors want to get in the Kawhi Leonard business, given their history, but also I think in the playoffs, they didn't have that veteran leadership, and I don't think Brandon Ingram counts on this, which is also why I think the LaMelo Ball acquisition for the Minnesota Timberwolves doesn't really make much sense, because LaMelo Ball has never played in the playoffs in the NBA. And so you're asking a lot of LaMelo Ball in Minnesota as the difference maker to increase that upside to win a championship. And the same thing for the Clippers. I don't understand, if you're the Clippers, why you go for Brandon Ingram, who I think with his contract, it was best case scenario last year for Brandon Ingram and the season that he had, all-star season. And still, I don't think that Brandon Ingram is going to move the needle for the Los Angeles Clippers. But what else? I don't think that Colin Murray-Boyles is going to be on the table for Kawhi Leonard. I don't think that Scottie Barnes is going to be on the table for Kawhi Leonard. So ultimately, what is it going to be for the Los Angeles Clippers in a deal for Toronto? But I can understand why the Raptors would want to get in the Kawhi Leonard business again, because he's as elite of a playoff performer, two-way playoff performer, as you'll find. And he still, in my opinion, was fifth in the MVP vote for me last year. So if they can get Kawhi, that'd be sensational.
Yeah, and I think for Toronto, they need that endgame scorer as well. And so I think for them, that's why they probably had interest in LaMelo, because in terms of creation, end of the shot clock, ability to get a bucket. Kawhi Leonard, of course, is just a way different version of that. As a forward, he's not a guard. He's a way older than LaMelo Ball as well. But I think for the Raptors, they're a team on the up and up. I mean, like, they nearly won last year over Cleveland, despite having lacking that on ball creation in a game seven against the Cavaliers. If you get Kawhi Leonard as an upgrade from Brandon Ingram, I think it would elevate this team to a whole new level. There's other moves still to be made. We'll see if they bring back Mamu. We'll see if they flip Pirtle, trade him somewhere else. But with Scotty Barnes really ascending, Colin Murray-Boyles entering year two, even Jacoby Walter, there's like so many good young players on this team that they drafted Alan Graves with the 19th pick, who I really like. RJ Barrett was excellent in the postseason last year. I think the Raptors should be, you know, poking around and seeing if there's a veteran worth acquiring at a decent price. And for Kawhi Leonard, given his age, his injury history, and lack of a future with a contract, he's only got the 1 year remaining. It's not like it would be an enormous return to go get Kawhi Leonard like it would be to go get Jaylen Brown. I'm not sure if Jaylen Brown is worth it with where the Raptors are, but Kawhi Leonard, why not? Why not?
Can I throw another name for you with the Toronto Raptors? Rudy Gobert.
Oh, yeah, that could be a center for him. I like that. That's a great idea. Why not both, Gobert and Kawhi? Huh? Why not that?
Well, I mean, that would be wild. Kawhi and Gobert for the Toronto Raptors. But, yeah, man, if you're looking for places for Rudy Gobert to be a defensive menace, the Toronto Raptors could use a center, and certainly they would have spacing issues. If you trade, let's say, Brandon Ingram for Rudy Gobert, that solves the four position for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I think both those teams, the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves, they're not done deal making. I think both of those teams are going to make one more big swing here before the transaction window concludes. I think for Toronto, Rudy Gobert as a defensive rim protector, a guy who can basically along CMB and Scottie Barnes, that's the best defense in the NBA next season. Do they have enough shooting and playmaking outside of that to make it worthwhile? I'm sure they could figure out ways to add a point guard in that situation. I don't think IQ Emmanuel Quickly is the answer there. Jamal Shedd is not a pure point guard. But defensively, if you add Rudy Gobert to Scottie Barnes and CMB, that and the Miami Heat are going to be the top contenders for the best defense in the NBA. So that's another name for Rudy Gobert is if they really are moving on from Rudy Gobert, I would imagine that the Toronto Raptors might be calling.
I could see that as well, Tom. I mean, I feel like this offseason already, just in general, Giannis Antetokounmpo getting moved to the Miami Heat, seeing LaMelo Ball go to the Minnesota Timberwolves, this is potentially going to be a massive offseason with a ton of changes, the landscape looking totally different in October compared to where it did at the end of April, at the end of the regular season. And we could see Jaylen Brown go somewhere now. We could see Kawhi go somewhere. We could see surprise deals that come out of nowhere that we're not even talking about right now. I mean, the fact even this morning, there was the reporting from the Stein line that the Bucks inquired about LaMelo Ball. I mean, there's just like these little interesting sub-stories that are happening right now with teams that you wouldn't expect inquiring about players that don't necessarily fit where they are. And I think this is sort of probably the objective of Adam Silver, where he said this. He wants it to be more like the NFL, where it feels like everybody's got a chance. And I think the offseason has sort of reflected that so far with both some of the things that have been rumored, but also some of the things that have actually happened. And so I do wonder what could be happening right now that we're not talking about. But ultimately, like, the draft happens. We had some interesting moves. We've had some big moves already. It's been a fun offseason so far, man. And like, in some ways, we really are still just getting started now. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen, because I'm already having fun, Tom. I'm having a good time already.
Is it too early to say that grit and grind is back in Memphis? Because, oh my God, I love that Isaiah Stewart trade. The Memphis Grizzlies have done in the past week, I don't think anyone has changed their fortunes better than the Memphis Grizzlies.
A-plus for the Grizzlies. Okay, so in the draft, just to recap their week, you mentioned they traded for Isaiah Stewart for 3 second-round draft picks. They draft Cameron Boozer with the 3rd pick in the draft, and then they have the 16th pick in the draft. They trade back one spot and get 2 future seconds from the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then they traded down 4 spots to get Kareem Lopez with the 21st pick and 3 additional second-round draft picks. They flip 3 seconds to go get Isaiah Stewart. They draft Richie Saunders, who I have the biggest basketball crush on. I love Richie Saunders so much. I've loved him for years at BYU. I had him ranked as a first-round pick last year. I had him as a first-rounder this year, getting him at 32. When I had Saunders on my podcast, I asked him, what are you most looking forward to when you get back on the court? He's like, oh, man, I can't wait to put a swim move on a defender and go crash the boards for a rebound. Like, that just sums up who Richie Saunders is. That the Grizzlies drafted 3 dogs in Boozer, Lopez, and Saunders, and they traded for the biggest dog in Isaiah Stewart. And so this Grizzlies team, they're not going to win a lot of games. They're still a very young team, but with Zach Edey and Cedric Coward and Jalen Wells and this new influx of rookies coming in and Isaiah Stewart, boy, oh boy, the Grizzlies are going to be like a really hard-playing team next year. To me, they are the biggest winner of the draft. I think they nailed all 3 picks. They nailed them all. And I'm excited to see these bright future Grizzlies grow this summer at Summer League and then also this coming year as well.
I'm so excited for the Grizzlies. I wouldn't put it past them that they have a winning season next year, that they win like 46 games. I think Cam Boozer right away is going to be a plus player in the league. That's how strong he is and how NBA ready he is. And I think he's going to be an MVP candidate one day. But I think day one, I think Cam Boozer is going to be outstanding for them. And then you look at Zach Edey, Cedric Howard, the Camp Spencer. This team is ready to make another big jump this year. And I think we both think that Cam Boozer was the best player in the draft, number one on your big board. And I think he is a tier above DeBonta and Caleb Wilson and Darren Peterson. I love what the Memphis Grizzlies did. And I think Isaiah Stewart is one of the most underrated players in the league. And one of those that, in the same way as Naz Reid in Charlotte, I'm just very excited to see what Isaiah Stewart, with all of the minutes that he's going to get in Memphis next year, with Zach Edey hopefully being healthy. I have big, big expectations for the Memphis Grizzlies, not just in the future, but next season.
Yep, I'm with you too. I think they're going to be a lot more competitive, and we'll see what happens with Ja Morant, right? I mean, like, where's he going to go? Who's going to trade for Ja? Or the Grizzlies going to have to give up picks to get rid of him? Or is Ja Morant going to be the type of guy we see waived and he signs elsewhere? There's a lot we don't know right now about Ja Morant and his future right now for the Grizzlies. But with Ja, we had our live show on Tuesday night. We were live for the whole first round. And there was a question asked, would you rather have Ja Morant or De'Aaron Fox? And I believe it was you and King McClure both said you'd rather have De'Aaron Fox. And I said, I'd rather have Ja Morant. You guys looked at me like I had 2 heads, and I get it, considering, you know, I mean, it's De'Aaron Fox is more kind of an angel, and Ja Morant, you know, he's on Instagram Live, and he's played like 25 games the last year and a half, and he's a very low value asset. However, Tom, I do think Ja has higher ceiling than De'Aaron Fox. And that's sort of my point here with De'Aaron Fox is just starting his max contract, overpay De'Aaron Fox, just starting one of the worst contracts in basketball. Ja Morant only has 2 years left. So that's part of my choice here in saying Ja is a short-term bet at 27 years old that you're betting that after hitting rock bottom here, you get him with only 2 years left. And you hope things work out, but if they don't, your hands are clean. Like, you're not concerned long-term. Whereas with Fox, what if the athletic decline has really begun? What if some of these playoff performances with diminishing performances continue when he's at the start of a max contract? That's ultimately why I said I'd rather have Ja Morant. if I'm trading for either of those guys right now in the NBA. Do you feel me?
Yeah, I totally get it. De'Aaron Fox, I think, is a much less exciting upside. He was an all-star next year. And for Ja Morant, can he get back to that all-star status? I think it's a lower chance of that happening than De'Aaron Fox, who already was an all-star last year. But I do think that, man, that contract that he's got coming is one of the worst in the league, even if he was an all-star. In the same way that Trae Young was recently an all-star and was, as the Atlanta Hawks found it, I still do not understand why the Wizards gave him a $200 million contract over the next 4 years. I think it might be the worst contract in the league, but De'Aaron Fox is not too far away from that status if he doesn't retain that athleticism that helped him be an all-star this year. But Ja Morant, let me ask you this. If you're Ja Morant, if you're the Memphis Grizzlies and the Houston Rockets called and said, we'll give you Reed Shepard for Ja Morant, you're saying yes to that deal, right?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Houston, yes. Houston is really interesting in both the Jaylen Brown and Ja Morant sweepstakes, or if you want to call it that. Houston is so fascinating to me with the Kevin Durant situation, Alperen Şengün, the Steven Adams injury last year, and Fred VanVleet. I think if we're going to pick a wild card in the transactional window here, I think it's got to be Houston. With the disappointing finish of the season 2 years in a row, Kevin Durant's win now window, I do think that the Houston Rockets, I think they've got a trade up their sleeve that we haven't seen yet, because I think they have a need and they have the assets, long-term assets, whether it's picks or Reed Shepard, that they could put, and Jabari Smith, that you could put into a deal and make something very appetizing for a star player on the table. And the question is, the contract of Jaylen Brown and Ja Morant, is that enough? Is that something, a pill that the Houston Rockets are willing to swallow to give up one of their young assets? Because Houston Rockets certainly can, they have the ammo to make a big time swing. It's just whether they actually do it or not.
If you were the Houston Rockets, Tom, would you give up Şengün and Jabari Smith for Jaylen Brown?
No, I'm just not as big of a Jaylen Brown fan as some others are. Okay. I think so that's too
buy
much
low on somebody, but not buy high on Jaylen.
Yeah. Okay. I just don't see that if I'm the Houston Rockets, Jaylen Brown and Kevin Durant. I know there was a lot of talk of uniting those guys in Boston. But I think Şengün, for me, the Houston Rockets feel like they just need a new coach off of Ime Udoka. I just don't love the way that they position Reed Shepard or Amen Thompson or Alperen Şengün for that offense, and just to reorient just the vision of that team. So I still believe in Alperen Şengün. I think people are down on him because of his lack of a three-point shot, that he came out last season. We thought he was going to be a much more dynamic player. Does he have the defensive upside to be an anchor for you? I think he's still a winning player and young enough, along with Jabari Smith, that if I'm Houston, I don't make that deal for Jaylen Brown. I would much rather have the package of Jabari Smith and Alperen Şengün.
Last thing here on Ja Morant, just to support my argument a little further here. Beginning of last season, when he was throwing his coach under the bus and he was playing like garbage on the court, he wasn't even getting to the basket. Less than 20% of his shots were coming at the rim. Over 80% of his shots were coming from mid-range or three-point range. The dude was just taking jumpers, brick after brick after brick. He looked horrific, a total shell of his former self. And then he took a month off. He came back in December and he played 8 games for the rest of the regular season, only 8 games in December and January. But in those 8 games, his shot distribution was identical to what it was during his 2 all-star seasons. His scoring efficiency was identical to what it was during those 2 all-star seasons. And so I'm not saying that Ja Morant is going to be able to do that over a full season. However, there's a very tiny, but an 8-game sample over a 2-month stretch in which he looked like Ja Morant for the Memphis Grizzlies, a tanking team that had no incentive to bring him back, that was clearly being very conservative with Ja Morant, with Zach Edey, with all their injured guys for the remainder of the year. And so I think with Ja, there's a chance that we see the return of all-star Ja Morant, perhaps with a new outlook new maturity, and that he becomes a very valuable acquisition for another team. In fact, Tom, there is a very small segment of Grizzlies fans I see anytime I make a post about him. They say, why wouldn't we just keep Ja with this new roster we have? There is a segment of Grizzlies fans who say that, and I do think we're going to see Ja Morant move. That's what everybody says around the league that I talk to. That's what very respected reporters like Brian Windhorst have said as well. I would expect a Ja deal. But at the same time, if other teams are saying, you need to give us picks to trade Ja Morant, who has only 2 years left on his deal, I think that's a bit silly. And I think that's purely just negotiation from those other teams, when in reality, Ja showed enough to me over that 8-game stretch that suggests he's closer to his prior form than perhaps we might think. That's my spiel on Ja.
I mean, yeah, but it's wishful thinking when you're talking about Ja Morant being healthy. I mean, Ja Morant hasn't played more than 6 consecutive games since 2023. Okay. It's been 3 years. All right. So,
and he was flawed at his peak as well. At his peak, he had his flaws.
And off court and on court. He has not been healthy in 3 years. And obviously, the suspensions are part of that. But we're talking about a guy whose engine is his jumping ability. The inflection point, his superstar quality, is his athleticism. And he hasn't been on the floor for 7 consecutive games since Dylan Brooks was on the Memphis Grizzlies. It's been that long.
Oh, my God.
So we can talk all about, like, hey, he's when he is healthy, but he hasn't shown that he can be consistently healthy in 3+ years. So if you are going to acquire him, you got to make sure not just that you have the best medical team in the NBA, but also the best leadership and organizational culture to make sure that he stays in line when it comes to the off-court issues. And if he hasn't been able to do it for Memphis, we'll see if he can do it for another organization. And that's why I think you're seeing some teams being like, I need to get some first-round picks in order to take on Ja Morant.
A couple final loose notes here, Tom. The other night in our first-round reaction podcast, we hit a lot of teams. So if people want to hear a lot of a recap from the NBA draft, make sure you check out me, Tom, and King McClure from earlier in the week, late Tuesday night after the first round. One team we didn't really hit and talk about too much was the Milwaukee Bucks. They took Braden Burries, a guard out of Arizona, with the 10th pick. And then with the 13th pick, they got a forward from Tennessee, Nate Ament. And then in the second round last night, they finished the draft taking Malik Lewis with the final pick in the second round. The Bucks, their first post-Giannis moves. I like what they did, Tom. I think Burries is a high floor player. He's going to instill immediately as a rookie some winning qualities with his hustle, with his versatility. He does all the dirty work. He'll screen for you. He'll cut. He can handle the ball as well. And then they also inject some upside with Ament. Ament, there's a chance he just turns out to be a journeyman 6'10 role player type. There's a chance of that. But there's also a chance a guy who was fourth ranked in high school entering the year at Tennessee, where he played with no spacing, dealt with injury. It was an up and down year for him. That years from now, we're like, how the hell did he fall to number 13 at 6'10" with a handle, with a shooting stroke, with a feel for passing, and he plays with flow? There's a chance we look back and we're like, how'd the Bucks get him at 13? And so I really like what the Bucks did last night. And I'm somebody who's been extremely critical of John Horst, who has bombed the draft for a decade straight, basically, at this point. And it's one of the reasons why the Bucks even had to trade Giannis. But I like what they did last night. First impressions of the post-Giannis era.
Yeah, these are high upside swings. And I do think that Amen is kind of like the Jabari Smith Jr. of the organization, where it's like the tools are there, the size is there, the shooting potential is there. It's just whether they can unlock that. And like I mentioned the other night, is it feels like another raw prospect that they looked at when they got Giannis in the first place at 15. So when you're looking at him, you can understand why they're looking to make a raw. He's got a lot of potential. He hasn't put it all together yet, which is why he slid so far in the draft from where he was coming into Tennessee. But if you're Milwaukee, Tyler Hero is still on the team. He hasn't been flipped to another team as of yet. And that may still happen to Detroit or elsewhere. But if you're looking at Jaime Jaquez Jr., and also Amen, I think there's some pieces there that you can be excited about. It's not going to make you happy. It's not going to make you contend for championships without Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's not going to fill that void. But for me, Milwaukee, this is, you know, these are raw prospects that you're not going to win tomorrow. You're not going to win next season. But hopefully the upside of Amen and the fact that he was so highly recruited and so highly thought of going into his year at Tennessee, maybe under an NBA system, you will see him flourish. But right now, yeah, this is an organization in flux. And I think they have potential to be in that relegation zone next year, considering how bad they were without Giannis. They have some pieces here, but I think they're going to be on that short list of teams that I'm going to be looking at to be potentially at that in that bottom three of the NBA next season. I just think that Amen, while he is a good prospect, I think he's it's a couple years down the road before I can think you can see dividends on the floor.
I think that's accurate there. In the live YouTube chat, at PTracer921 said, you gave everybody A grades, but the Spurs, LOL. Not, well, let me just clarify. Not quite everybody. I gave 17 A grades, 17 A's, 10 B's. And the rest were C's. So those were my grades. I was a very favorable grader, to be clear. But I do think, Tom, like, that's the nature of this draft class. It was a loaded year in the NBA. And I think a lot of teams drafted incredibly well. It was the most chalk first round that I can ever remember. I don't remember ever being less shocked by things happening in the first round in terms of the range guys were taken, who decided to take which players, and like the fits all make sense for the players for the most part, and the risks make sense for certain teams. And like the most exciting, unexpected thing that happened was Henry Vissar falling to number 52. In the second round. He was a guy that a lot of teams thought would go in the late first round or early second round at worst. And once he did end up slipping to the second round, as somebody always inevitably does, the first initial thought was that he was going to go very early. But in my conversations with teams and agents, a lot of these second round draft picks are going to be signing on two-way deals, or they're going to be stashed. It's going to be a lot of two-ways. And my impression is that Vassar and his agent, the team, formerly Wasserman, they were telling teams, we're not going to take a two-way. And so I would assume that it's going to be a full NBA contract with Atlanta jumping up to get him, trading to get him at 52. But that was like the biggest shocker of the whole night, of the whole two nights of the draft, was Vassar falling to 52. Then that's indicative of what this draft was. As loaded of a class as it was, there wasn't many shockers, Tom.
No, when we were trying to find like who was the worst pick of the draft or the biggest reach in the draft, yeah, I think both of us are scrambling. You know, like,
it's not much.
There really isn't much to go with.
I said Zubi Ejiofor to Atlanta was the worst.
And like, I think you like Zuby's that pick, right?
Yeah, I gave it a C+. It's a good pick. He's a good player. I just don't like the fit. So Zubi Ejiofor,
there's
worst
no Bruno
pick,
Caboclo in this draft.
Yeah, no. Right. There's no Thon Maker. There's no like insane pick. Like if like Chris Sinak goes 27 to the Celtics, if he had went 10th, I'd be like, are you nuts? Milwaukee taking him at 10? You know, but there's none of that. There's no pick like that in this year's class.
Yeah, the only one that I was soft on really in the lottery was Mychal Brown. I felt like him, I would have rather have taken Acuff, but like, again, we're splitting hairs at that point. So I think this is, Yahoo is so excited because mock draft, all of mock drafts now are a lot more valuable considering how chalk this was, is that people are now going to be reading into mock drafts a lot more closely given how much we at Yahoo and everybody else were able to really project this draft with a lot of certainty. I think you're going to be the mock draft industry is going up, way up, up and to the right because of how well I think we all saw how this draft was going to go.
Teams will get random again at some point, maybe. Maybe, or who knows? Maybe, maybe the consensus is forming. I think one of the other surprises was, related to the grade aspect, as Chat was talking about with the Spurs. I gave Jaden Quaintance at number 20 and Terrace Reed at number 26. I think I gave them both B grades. In the second round, San Antonio drafted Jacoby Gillespie, a small guard, and Malik Brown, kind of a undersized big with the 42nd and 44th picks, respectively. The Spurs overall in my team grades that are going to be released are going to get a B minus. With Quaintance, let's follow up on the draft night conversation. With Quaintance, I said on the show that my sources said that there's a chance he could miss his entire rookie season because he might need more surgery. Quaintance himself said that in his presser with Spurs media, that he's going to have another surgery on his meniscus. That doesn't mean he'll be out his entire rookie year, but in my conversations with teams prior to the draft, there was a belief that he might just redshirt his whole rookie year. And so we'll see how the Spurs handle it. But I think you nailed it, Tom. You nailed it on Tuesday night when you said the Spurs took Quaintance at 20, Terrace Reed at 26, and then they got Malik Brown at 44. What's all in line there? The Spurs added three bigs to support Victor Wembanyama. That's what's very, very clear with what San Antonio used this draft to do. And I think these guys might play early in their careers. I'm not going to be shocked with any of them. Two upperclassmen in Terrace Reed and Malik Brown, two dramatically different types of bigs. Malik Brown, more of a switchable 6'8", very hard-nosed, tough but undersized center. And Terrace Reed, he's big, 6'11", low post player, gives a different flair, could switch a little bit, but not nearly as much as Malik Brown. And then Jaden Quaintance, if he's able to play or if he does redshirt, and if he gets healthy, it's a big if with him, but he was one of the best defenders in college basketball as a freshman when he was at Arizona State. And so very clear to me, San Antonio is bolstering that front court, as you said, even after just the first pick, after they took Quaintance, you said that.
Do you think the Spurs and who improved their championship by ability after draft night more or draft two nights? OKC or the Spurs?
OKC. I think Oklahoma City did. And the reason why I say that with San Antonio is because, like, Terrace Reed is, in my opinion, more of like a replacement level center. I think he's going to be a good rotation guy, but he's not like some world beater type. Malik Brown is a rotation guy. Gillespie is very undersized. We'll see how much he plays. And Quaintance, we'll see if he even plays at all. Whereas with Oklahoma City, they drafted Adai Mata with the 12th pick, the player everybody was talking about them trading up to go get, and they get him at number 12. And then they trade up one spot for Bennett Sturts, who's a five-year college player, an elite pick-and-roll creator, an elite shooter off the catch. I cannot wait to see him playing in this OKC system. And then in the second round, they take Otega Owe, who is a very, very interesting player at Kentucky this past year. He was a lot of an on-ball guy. He had a huge 35-8-7 game against Santa Clara in the opening round in March Madness. He had a buzzer beater to force overtime in that game. So he can do a little bit on ball. But to me, he projects as more of a 3-and-D-plus guy in the NBA, and he made 38% of his catch-and-shoot threes over his four-year college career. He's a very good, very strong, versatile defender. He feels like a potential Lu Dort replacement. And so I think with OKC, all three of their picks, Mara can play right away, Sturts can offer rotation depth right away, and Owe gives OKC a bit more flexibility with the moves they want to make. I think OKC raised their ceiling quite a bit with their three draft selections, whereas San Antonio, it's more like depth behind Wemby, which is important, but not necessarily big-time ceiling raisers.
I hear you. I think in terms of the deals that we've seen so far and the draft, I think there have been, I think, three clear winners given the draft and the trades that we've seen so far. I think OKC won draft night alongside Memphis, but Memphis is not a title contender, so I'm not putting them in that same category. I think Miami, with getting Giannis, obviously you get a two-time MVP still in his prime. I'm going to be taping a big number episode with Dan Devine after this, where we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Giannis trade. with the Miami Heat and what that does for their championship hopes next season and what moves could be still happening with them. But I think that those two teams are big winners at the top of the NBA. I'm not talking about just Memphis doing, I think they have done so much good in improving their organizational future. But in terms of the top, I think Detroit with the Okoro acquisition on the draft night is a good move. But I also think Isaiah Stewart, I think, is enough of a negative losing him. I have concerns about Detroit, whether they took a step back here as of now. We still have yet to see the final product there after the transactional window ends. But I think Charlotte, as much as LaMelo Ball had put the pieces together last season, I still think that Charlotte is going to have another, I think that as good of a season last year, and potentially better with Naz Reid breaking out in a Charlotte Hornets uniform. But I think that OKC and Miami are the two teams at the top of the NBA that did the most to increase their title odds. I don't know if you have any other teams that have changed their at the top, the top brass of the NBA, the upper crust of the NBA. How much have we really changed over the past week? I think Miami is a clear winner, and then OKC with getting Adai Mata. And then I think after that, I don't know if there's another team at the top that have really made a big swing here. Maybe Atlanta, but I don't think that you can say the Lakers bringing back Austin Reeves and getting Carr in the draft. He's a good, great athlete, but I'm not saying that he's the 3-and-D guy that you want next to Luka Doncic. Denver, I'm not seeing that they made any big moves. San Antonio, Boston, New York, obviously not making big moves. So to me, I still think there's another team that is going to make a shape-shifting move at the top of the NBA. And I think OKC and Miami are the clear winners so far.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you there. And in regards to Miami, they took a guy by the name of Ryan Conwell in the second round with the 37th pick from Louisville. And coincidentally, the top comparison for Conwell in my NBA draft guide was Norm Powell. And so 6'2", kind of a combo guard type, very, very versatile scorer at Louisville last year, 19 points per game, knockdown shooter, could get to the rim. He's got a real strong frame, even though he's 6'2", kind of like Norm Powell. And so I think from Miami, that's a very underrated acquisition for them. And maybe we see him even play a bit as a rookie, even though he's the 37th pick in the draft. I really, really like Conwell. But like in terms of other teams, Tom, I do think we're still waiting on more of those shape shifting moves. Like even for Atlanta, like they draft Kingston Flemings with the 8th pick, Zubi Ejiofor at number 23, and then Henry Vassar at 52. All three of them together, I mean, I really, really like what Atlanta did. I think they injected some serious talent into their rotation. I still would like to see them get a true five, a true center as part of that roster to help elevate things overall. But Atlanta is the team. I wonder if there's a move to be made, if there's a move coming to really level up there. But if it's not coming today, maybe in 1 year, Tom, because Atlanta, they must be rooting against Minnesota hard for Anthony Edwards to become available 1 year from now or 2 years from now and to go snatch him from Minnesota. I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. So maybe Atlanta is an underrated winner of the week as well.
Yeah, I think the Ant watch is on. I think once you see a trade where they get rid of their two bigs and Julius Randle and Naz Reid with LaMelo Ball and how volatile that can be. Like I am expecting nothing with the LaMelo Ball, because I don't think I can, everything is on the table for LaMelo Ball and what the next couple years are like in Minnesota with Anthony Edwards and no power forward right now. We'll see what they do. We just got word from Shams Charania that the Charlotte Hornets are bringing back Coby White on a 3-year, $74 million deal. So about $25 million a year seems about right for the talent and the need for the Charlotte Hornets. That's a solid move for them. And I don't think he's going to be the starting point guard. I think he'll still be off the bench as a sixth man, like you saw towards the end of the last season. I think look, if you're looking at Josh Giddey, Keegan Murray, Naz Reid in that same window, Christian Brown with 5-year deal for Christian Brown. This is a 3-year deal at similar money. I think this is a solid deal for the Charlotte Hornets.
The first game of Summer League, Tom, is going to be the Memphis Grizzlies against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then the second one is Atlanta versus Utah. That's for the Utah Summer League. That schedule's been released. I'm not going to Utah, and I'm not going to the California Classic either. I'll be going to Vegas for Summer League, and I'm already thinking about using the Game Time app to get some of those the close-up seats. You know that little restricted zone they have? I'm thinking about using the Game Time app to get one of those tickets because I want to be up close when we see AJ DiBonsa versus Darren Peterson. I'd assume on opening night. The schedule's not out yet for the Las Vegas Summer League, but I can't wait for Summer League this year, man. I think fans are going to see just an immediate injection of good rookie talent, and it's going to become very apparent during Summer League. And I just can't wait to see these rooks, man, because this really does have a chance to be a historic draft class in terms of the top-end talent with AJ, Darren, Cam, and Caleb, those four names. We might know them on a first-name basis many years from now as that group in the top four. But then just the depth, man, I can't wait to see so many guys that were seniors drafted in the second round. Like this class, man, like Bruce Thornton to Houston, how does he translate right away? I can't wait to see that works out. Isaiah Evans to Minnesota. Is he going to be the DiVincenzo replacement immediately? What's Trayvon Brazil going to look like after his long journey this year in college? He finally got his athleticism back after knee injuries this past year at Arkansas. What's he going to look like for Denver? There's just so many guys that I can't wait to watch. Tyler Nickel with the New York Knicks, sharpshooter. Man, Ugonna Onyenso going to the Detroit Pistons. Could he be your beef stew replacement right away? Is he a Jalen Duren replacement? Tom, I just can't wait. I can't wait for Summer League. So I'm going to be using the Game Time app to get some tickets. I already know I'm going to do it. That's what my gut's telling me to do. I want to sit up close for some historic games on Thursday and Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Look, the free agency season and the trades that are about to come, there's going to be a lot more excitement to come in the summer in the NBA. I can't wait to see it, man.
I can't wait. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today. You just said it. You're going to be recording an episode of The Big Number. Be sure to subscribe to Tom Show, The Big Number, and hit the subscribe button on my show if you have not done so already, especially if you're one of the many, many people watching us here live on YouTube, Yahoo NBA. Give us a like. Hit the subscribe button if you've not done so already. We got a lot of off-season content coming. We're just getting rolling here, baby. Can't wait to see how it all unfolds. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Looking forward to talking again very soon. Have a good day, everybody.